Skinfusion at 165 Ontario Street, just steps away from City Hall, is your luxury wellness destination offering elevated skincare and relaxation experiences featuring four beautifully designed treatment rooms staffed with professional estheticians dedicated to exceptional care, personalized treatments, and results-driven skincare, and specializing in luxury facials, body treatments, massage, and advanced skin therapies using premium products. Follow at Skinfusion Kingston on Instagram for news and offers, and book online at skinfusion.ca or call 613-541-0111.
Good evening. It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Henry Walker, and Ellie MacArthur. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. This year's Kingston General Hospital Auxiliary's Teddy Bear campaign has officially kicked off. Since the annual campaign launched in 2004, it has raised more than $500,000, providing funds for new equipment for the pediatric program at Kingston Health Sciences Center. Last year, more than 300 teddy bears were delivered to young patients, and community donations brought the hospital past the midway point of its two-year, $55,000 goal for a point-of-care ultrasound machine. This year's campaign runs until December 23rd, with the goal of crossing the finish line on that two-year commitment. Chelsea Reynolds, president of the KGH Auxiliary, sat down with CFRC to chat about this year's campaign. Well, to start us off, so great to have you back. For folks who aren't familiar, I was wondering if you could give us a refresher on what the KGH Teddy Bear campaign is all about.
So the Teddy Bear campaign is something that we've been running. This is our 22nd year, and it's a fundraiser that we do, the auxiliary runs, to raise funds for pediatric care in our KGH site. The bears are available for sponsorship. It costs $100, and all the funds raised goes for equipment for pediatric units.
Mm-hmm. And this is the second year fundraising for a point-of-care ultrasound machine in the pediatric unit. I was wondering if you could speak a bit about that goal, where we're at, how far we have to go.
Yeah, so the last year we made a two-year commitment and the cost was $55,000. Last year we raised $28,000, so we just need to get basically the same amount again. And then the ultrasound machine stays on the pediatric units, which makes it easier for the families and the patients in particular, because they don't have to go somewhere. They don't have to be wheeled downstairs. They don't have to go where they're not as comfortable, they're not as familiar, and the families can stay right with them. And for the staff, it's right there on the floor. Hopefully they can get results a little bit quicker. Everyone's just a little more at ease.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned last time we chatted, you know, that second year, sometimes it's a little harder to get that push.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could speak to that, give some words of inspiration for the community.
Yeah. So last year when we first started talking about it, it's new and it's exciting and, oh, we have this big goal. Now this year it sort of feels like, okay, well, now we're trying to finish that off. But it's, you know, it's a great goal to think about that being in the hospital and available for use for our staff and for the benefit of our patients.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to get this, again, awesome piece of equipment, but I was wondering if you could also speak to that immediate impact of, you know, being able to deliver the bears at Christmas time and that kind of aspect of it.
Yeah, so the bears will get delivered, I think it's December 19th, 20th sort of thing. And so that's to any young people who are in the hospital at KGH, at Hotel Dew. We also partner with a hospital and Moose Factory, Winnebago. And so bears are delivered there. And I was actually just approached last week. I was out for a walk and a dad and two daughters came up to me. And 3 years ago, one of the daughters had been in having surgery close to Christmas and she had received a bear. And they recognized me and said, "Are you the teddy bear lady?" And they still remembered that and it had made such an impact on them. And she's doing well, which was lovely. So to hear that 3 years on, and she said, "Thanks again for the bear," it was really, really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yes, people are really making that immediate impact right in our community.
Yes, right? Because, I mean, nobody wants to be in the hospital ever. Nobody wants to be in the hospital at Christmas time, and especially if you're a small person. So to get that bear is just, you know, a little bit of something extra.
And for folks who are returning donors or first-time donors, how can they get involved?
The easiest way to donate is through Canada Helps. If you just look up KGH Auxiliary and then the Teddy Bear Campaign through there, that's you can direct your funds directly to that. You can also go on the KHSC website and make your way to our page. We have a form. You can fill that out. But Canada Helps is probably the easiest for people this way.
The 2025 Bears will be available for sponsorship until December 23rd and can be purchased by calling 613-549-6666, extension 6352, completing the donation brochure, or by visiting Canada Helps and selecting Teddy Bear Campaign 2025 in the donation details section. Another first-of-its-kind innovation from Kingston Health Sciences Center and Queen's University. A new 3D-printed surgical biopsy tool is changing the way scientists approach glioblastoma, a uniquely difficult to study and aggressive form of brain cancer. Neurosurgeon scientists and assistant professors Dr. James Persner and Dr. Teresa Persner, along with Queen's Engineering PhD candidate Caitlin Andrews, designed and patented a 3D surgical biopsy capsule, a tool used to take small tissue samples from brain tumors with precision. Published recently in the journal Operative Neurosurgery, this breakthrough has the potential to transform how brain tumors are studied and treated. Potential applications include more targeted radiation treatments, more precise and safer surgical decision-making, and new drug development informed by the most comprehensive molecular profiles of glioblastoma to date. Dr. Teresa Persner and engineering PhD candidate Caitlin Andrews sat down to share more about the development of this innovative tool.
Well, to get started, glioblastoma, it's incredibly complex. I was wondering if you could describe what makes this cancer so uniquely difficult to study.
Yeah, it's a really, of all the cancers that I've tried to study, including pediatric and adult brain cancers, for me, it's by quite a margin the most difficult one to tackle, to even conceive of how we start tackling, let alone to tackle. And there's a few reasons for that. So first of all, it's really heterogeneous. So it's made up of many different types of populations of cells. And unfortunately, we've shown that those different types of cells can actually convert between each other. And so you can think you're trying to create, you're trying to find a target that you target with a drug. If that target can change at any time and response to your drug, it makes it very difficult. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that it's already all over the brain at the time of diagnosis. So if you look at an MRI, you see this round, bright circle, which is the tumor. But we know that back, you know, a long time ago, in the early days of neurosurgery, they actually took out the entire half of the brain that had the tumor in it, and it still came back on the other side of the brain. So it means that it's disseminated at diagnosis. And while, you know, there's this protective barrier in the brain called the blood-brain barrier that stops drugs and, you know, and toxins and bad things from getting into the brain. So it's good for your brain health. But when you're trying to get drugs into the brain, it prevents it from getting there. So where that big primary tumor is, that barrier is broken down. But for the rest of the brain, it's still very much intact. And so those are sort of the three reasons why this is just an incredibly difficult cancer to fight.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps this will be more for Caitlin, but I was wondering if you could explain in simple terms what this new 3D printed biopsy capsule is and what kind of impact it's going to have on research and treatment.
Absolutely. So as you said, it's a small 3D printed capsule. And the way it kind of works is that it adapts to the tip of pre-existing surgical suction. And then there's a little piston on the inside. And so when the suction's applied, the piston gets pulled up and that traps a sample of brain in the capsule itself. We can actually correlate our sample locations to the preoperative scans through intraoperative neuronavigation. So we can mark each point where the samples are taken from, and it's fully self-contained. So there's no cross-contamination between the samples at all. There's no risk of it damaging. It holds the integrity of the sample together. And that allows us to have like a very clear picture of that exact precise sample location going forward for research, which anyone who does genomics or transcriptomics research understands is very important. The more information we have and the less risk of contamination, the better our sample quality. And so all these factors together really let us have a very precise view of the different regions of the tumors that we're interested in, which is something that we haven't been able to really do easily with standard technologies. It could be done in not the safest ways, which obviously patient priority is our safety, or is our priority. Patient safety is our priority. But it allows us to safely capture all these samples in a quick and efficient way. That's not too much of a stress for the surgical team. So always the goal is shortest operation possible with as little risk to the patient as possible.
Mm-hmm. And are you guys already using this in your research right now?
Yeah, so we've used it in 2 patients so far. In our publication, we had a clinical validation where we used it versus the standard of care in a human glioblastoma tumor. And we've since also used it for other cases, and we're hoping to expand its use through the next year.
Mm-hmm. And I know the process of getting something patented is quite a journey. I was wondering if you could speak a bit to that, how it all kind of began and how your team ended up here where you're now using this in research.
Yeah, I think it is. So device development can be a really long and arduous journey, especially getting it from concept to human. And so we were just very thoughtful from the very beginning on how we developed it, so that we developed it in a way that would ultimately be safe for human use. And acceptable from an ethics perspective. So from the very beginning, when we were designing the capsule itself, we took into account things like, you know, are these FDA approved materials? Are we creating it in a way that is very simple and easy to use with humans? And then when it came to IP, you know, what is the IP landscape? Are there devices out there that are very similar to ours that would preclude us from eventually filing a patent? And so from the very initial design steps, we took into account the eventual commercialization and the human readiness of the materials we were using. And so we got to human use very, very quickly, I think, because the end goal was embedded in the very initial design process.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think it means for Kingston Health Sciences Center and Queens to kind of be at the center of this global first innovation?
I think it's great. Yeah, I think, you know, I think Kingston's a small town in a lot of regards, right? And so Queens kind of, you know, it punches above its weight with Queens. And so whenever we can sort of raise a flag and say, hey, we're doing something innovative and novel, it just puts us on the global stage. Yeah. And so I think it's great. And I think that the more innovation we can do, the more, you know, kind of first that we can do, it also creates greater confidence in the patient population that they're going somewhere that has all the technology and all the resources and expertise required to receive, you know, exceptional care. And for me, at the end of the day, I love science. It's, you know, it's one of my favorite parts of my whole job is doing science. But I'm here for the patients, right? And to build that confidence in them and to see their confidence in us and our program from a clinical perspective, but also an innovation perspective, it's very gratifying.
Yeah. And I'm curious, Caitlin, since you're still a student, how does it feel to, you know, have this tool that you worked on being out there?
Yeah, it's definitely been a really interesting experience to be a part of. The tool development all started during my undergrad. I've been at Queens for far too long now. And getting to see it move through the stages at the speed that it did, to now having used in patients, it's really been an amazing experience, to be honest. And it's an amazing team to have worked with, everyone from Jamie and Teresa, who are obviously like the spearheads of campaigning for it and helping with its development and providing all the user feedback, to even the other neurosurgeons. So in the early stages, when we were doing preclinical validation, we had the neurosurgery team here compare, as well as grad students, between the standard of care tools and our novel tool using porcine brain as our model. And so getting everybody's actual feedback from not just Jamie and Teresa, but the actual, like every member of the neurosurgery team here, is a really unique opportunity. So it's been super interesting to be a part of, and I'm super grateful for the opportunity to have taken part in it.
Mm-hmm. And moving forward, you're building those partnerships with other hospitals, hoping to get this tool out there. What are your hopes for the next few years in this department?
I mean, so the tool was developed to do science, right? We didn't develop the tool because we just wanted a tool. We wanted a tool so that we could access tissue in a way and with a granularity and precision that wasn't otherwise possible. And so now the next 5 years, part of it will be, you know, if other people want the tool, more than happy to share it. We create it in a way where it's 30 cents a capsule, and we can literally send off an email to another institution. They can print it off. And we actually did that. We tried it with SickKids, and they printed off some of our capsules, right? So it's extremely mobile, and we'd be delighted to share it with anyone. But what I'm really excited about is now the science that will come out of it. So it's kind of a little bit TBD. We'll see what happens, but that it was built to do science, not just to be a tool in itself.
Once again, that was neurosurgeon scientist Dr. Teresa Persner and Queen's Engineering PhD candidate Caitlin Andrews on a new 3D printed surgical biopsy tool changing the way scientists approach glioblastoma.
As Persner and Andrews mentioned, the capsule is already being used in operating rooms at KHSC, making Kingston the only medical center in the world currently using this new tool. As for what comes next, the Kingston team is now building partnerships with other hospitals across Ontario to expand its reach. Work is also underway to build a state-of-the-art tissue bank facility that can store samples from patients across Canada, positioning Kingston as a global hub for brain tumor research. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. This is your Queen's Campus News on CFRC's Queen's Campus Beat. I'm Henry Walker. Queen's University is speaking out following the circulation of an offensive Instagram video that surfaced earlier this month. The video, reported to contain transphobic, anti-Semitic, and sexually violent language, appears to have been filmed in Kingston's University District. While the individuals speaking in the video are not believed to be affiliated with Queen's University, the university itself has issued a firm condemnation of the content, calling it deeply disturbing. In its statement, Queen's emphasized its commitment to fostering a safe, inclusive, and respectful campus environment. Students are reminded that resources are available through Campus Wellness Services, the Human Rights and Equity Office, and specialized gender diversity support programs. The university is encouraging anyone affected by the incident to reach out for support or to report concerns through established equity and harassment channels. Looking to the future, Queen's is gearing up for one of its biggest annual outreach events. Booth registration is now open for the Science Rendezvous Kingston 2026, which returns on May 9th. This free, family-friendly science festival brings thousands of visitors to downtown Kingston each spring. It features live demonstrations, interactive experiments, robotics, chemistry shows, and exhibits from Queen's researchers, labs, and student teams. Anyone interested in hosting a booth, whether you're part of a faculty, or a student group, or a community organization, can now register through the Science Rendezvous website. A virtual information session held earlier this month provided guidance for new exhibitors, and recordings are available for those who missed it. Organizers say they expect this year's event to be one of the largest yet. Additionally, the latest edition of the Queen's Alumni Review has just been released, offering a look at some of the major projects and initiatives underway across campus this fall. One highlight is the continued Agnes Etherington Arts Center renovations, part of the long-term Agnes Reimagined project. While the main building remains closed for construction, the Agnes team is running an active program of off-site exhibitions and community events. These are taking place in the Rideau building and in several partner locations across Kingston. The university also released its draft bicentennial vision, a planning document looking ahead to Queen's 200th anniversary in 2041. The draft outlines priorities including research leadership, community engagement, sustainability, and long-term financial resilience. Feedback from campus consultants will continue to shape the final version before it goes to the Board of Trustees. And as many may recall, Queen's once again marked the National Day of Truth and Reconciliation earlier this fall by pausing academic activities and hosting events focused on Indigenous histories and healing. Restoration work on some of the university's historic structures, including the iconic castle-style building near Summerhill, was also highlighted in the campus update. Thank you for listening. This has been your Queen's Campus Beat.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Wednesday, November 26th, warmest day of the week, 10 degrees in the forecast with an 85% chance of precipitation. That rain is going to cool things off quite a bit, however, as we will drop down to zero overnight. Thursday, November 27th, 4 degrees is your high, but it's going to feel much colder, actually feeling closer to minus 4. 65% chance of precipitation, which means we are going to see periods of light snow throughout the day, dropping down to minus 2 overnight, which is going to feel closer to minus 6. Friday, November 28th, brief. One is your daytime high with a little bit of sunshine in the forecast, but it's going to be very chilly, feeling closer to -7, so bundle up when you're out and about. Saturday, November 29th, high of 0, and it's not going to be as bone-chillingly cold, just a low of -2 that will feel like -2. Sunday, November 30th, daytime high of 3 degrees, mix of rain and snow in the forecast, dropping down to just below freezing overnight. And then the start of December, Monday, December 1st, daytime high of 5 degrees with a 63% chance of precipitation. This is Jesse Bell with your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. We begin with road closures. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, King to Stewart is closed November 25th to 26th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day for the removal of a large tree. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne, closed for construction at 283 Queen Street. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Raglan Road, Division to Main, closed until November 30th from 7:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. each day for gas main installation. Toronto Street, Durham to Park, is closed until November 28th for installation of new water, sanitary, and storm services. And Victoria Street, Union to Johnson, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardner's, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage. Trudell Road, development to Danbury, expect delays while a contractor completes road and sidewalk improvements. And Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Hey, this is Ellie MacArthur, an intern from the Queen's Department of History, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. It's time for our concerts calendar for the week of November 24th to the 30th. Kingston has a stacked week of live music, from cozy vibes to big stages, so let's dive right in. On Wednesday at 5:30 p.m., catch Tyler Brett Forks performing at the Bank Gastro Bar and across the pond, or across the lake, I should say. Hotel Wolf Island starts the evening with DJ Great White from 4 to 7 p.m., followed by their open mic at 7:30 p.m. Also on Wednesday, Wings and Tunes open mic kicks off at the Cove Inn at 5 p.m., and some Kingston favorites, Christopher Jackson at the Creekside Bar and Johnny Kerwin at Time Out Bar, both starting at 6 p.m. On Thursday the 27th, we've got some high energy at the Broom Factory with No Bro and Societal Siege at 7:30 p.m. Meanwhile, at the RCHA, catch Beats Workin' at 7 p.m. and Original Thursdays with Evan Carlson, Ron Steves at the Coven starting at 5 p.m. Emily Trigg is a folk roots musician, and her new album, The Great Escape, just dropped. She is playing at Hotel Wolf Island with John Bora starting at 8:30 p.m. And Time Out Bar has a double bill on Thursday with John McClurg at 4 p.m., followed by Ted Landlone at 7 p.m. Heading into the weekend, on Friday, we've got something for every person and every genre. Starting at the Broom Factory, Charlie Houston's Big After I Die tour is with Last Call and LHRK at 7 p.m. At the RCHA, Kent Nicholson kicks off TGIF Happy Hour at 4 p.m., followed by $5 dates at 8 p.m. Also on Friday, Ontario Festival of Small Halls brings us Ben Kaplan at the Cove Inn starting at 6 p.m. And also at 6 p.m., Scott Owen performs at the Creekside Bar. Another triple bill at the Mansion on Friday with Matt Campbell, Otis Strange, and Lustre at 8 p.m. And also at the Mansion on Friday in the Wine Cellar, catch House in the Mansion Volume 3 starting at 9 p.m. And to round out Friday with some sweet acoustics, we've got Spencer Evans at Time Out Bar starting at 7 p.m., Bon Evans at Tiernan Og at 9 p.m. And if you're after a pre-dinner treat, Chris Morris at the Toucan starts at 5 p.m. Starting off Strong on Saturday, November 29th with Stephen Stanley, No Electric, and Tanya Joy at the Broom Factory starting at 7:30 p.m. This night is all about storytelling with Stanley's nostalgia and thoughtful rock, as well as Joy's soulful folk. Also on Saturday is GovFest featuring Dewey Roadkill, Retirement Plan, Doing Okay, Veritones, Sweet Pea in the Heat, and Lowry at the Buckle from 6 p.m. to midnight. This is a charity event, and the money raised through GovFest Kingston is specifically used to fund the local KFLNA United Way, which supports local community projects and provides support systems for vulnerable community members. In addition, 50% of the proceeds from GovFest are used to fund Ryan's Well Foundation, which works to provide consistent access to safe drinking water in developing regions worldwide. Tickets are $20 advance and $25 at the door. There will also be a silent auction, door prizes, and a raffle from local businesses. So swing by the Buckle from 6 p.m. to midnight on Saturday and support some good music for a good cause. Also on Saturday, the Isabel Voices present a festive celebration at the Isabel Bader Center starting at 2:30 p.m. On Sunday, it's Sunday Fun Day Chicken Pickin' at the Cove Inn from 1 to 4 p.m. And the Queens Dance Club has their mid-year recital at Kingston Grand Theater starting at 6 p.m. Thanks so much for joining me. If you have a concert that you'd like to add to our online and on-air calendar, reach out at cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link in our bio. Hey, you're listening to CFRC 101.9. My name is Ellie MacArthur, an intern from the Queen's Department of History, and it is time for the events calendar for the week of November 24th to the 30th. As the winter creeps in, there's lots of trivia, community events, performances, and holiday programming, so let's jump right in. On Wednesday, catch the book launch and discussion for Social Innovation for Real World Transformation with Chris Mackey, Julie Paquette, and Jonathan Durand Fulco at the Broom Factory starting at 7 p.m. There's also trivia at Daft Brewing starting at 7 p.m. And as always, warm up those vocal cords on Wednesday. We've got karaoke at Jersey Sports Bar starting at 7 p.m., karaoke at Timeout Bar starting at 8 p.m., and the classic karaoke at the Mansion starting at 9 p.m. On Thursday at 6:30 p.m., the Spire hosts Inspired Aging, a Talks with Docs event, which is a thoughtful and informative series about staying healthy and growing older. And for theater lovers, Guys and Dolls hits the stage at Le Sesame Theater at 7:30 p.m. If you just didn't get enough of karaoke on Wednesday, don't fret. There's karaoke at Tierna and Og starting at 9 p.m. And if you're trying to work out those brain muscles before the weekend, catch trivia at Riverhead starting at 7 p.m. or trivia at Queen's Pub starting at 9 p.m. Some interesting events moving into Friday. At 5:30, Sutherland Hall hosts the Black Innovation and Tech Futures Forum, a discussion and networking opportunity at the intersection of technology and equity. And if you're seeking some holiday vibes, we have the Baroque Christmas Treats at St. James Anglican Church from 5:15 to 7 p.m. with traditional music in a beautiful setting. And theater fans can once again catch Guys and Dolls at Le Sesame Theater at 7:30 p.m. Also on Friday, Ruben in the Dark performs at the Royal Canadian Legion Branch 160 at 7:30 p.m. And finally on Friday, at Wolf Island, the Wolf Island Records Musical Review is at Hotel Wolf Island at 8 p.m. with a showcase of labeled talent. Guys and Dolls continues on Saturday with a 2 p.m. matinee and a 7:30 evening show. At 7:30 p.m., Kingston Grand Theatre presents Barca, a Girovara production, which is an innovative and artistic stage performance. And if you want to participate rather than watch, karaoke at Timeout Bar kicks off at 9 p.m. On Sunday, it is the last chance to catch Guys and Dolls musical at Le Sesame Theatre at 2 p.m. There's the Xmas Family Sing-Along at the Spire at 2:30 p.m. This is an all-ages event, so bring your kids and get into the holiday spirit. And finally, as always, wrapping up the week with karaoke at the Toucan starting at 10:30 p.m. Thank you so much for joining me this week. If you have an event that you'd like to add to our online or on-air event calendar, you can reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. Have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. CFRC 101.9 FM has launched its annual funding drive to raise $25,000 to support station operations, news and creative programming, and upgrades to our recording and performance studios. You can make a difference. Visit CFRC.ca right now and make your gift. Get a tax receipt or sweet, sweet CFRC swag and enter to win our weekly raffle draws featuring gifts from amazing local donors. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to Word Labs Out Loud, your weekly writing spark on CFRC 101.9 FM. Before I begin today's episode, I just want to remind everyone that CFRC 101.9, your campus and community radio station, is currently doing its funding drive. Every year in November and December, this station does a funding drive. This is an opportunity to upgrade equipment, which is much needed in some cases. It also provides opportunities for musicians and community artists, volunteers, students to receive training and have opportunities like this to be on air. So I'd encourage you, if you love this station, if you love the idea of independent local programming, including local news, local arts, local ideas, visit CFRC.ca and donate today. There's lots of great prizes, lots of cool merch you can get, an opportunity to win gift certificates from other local businesses. So it's a win-win. You're supporting a great station, you're supporting a great cause. This is the final week of Word Lab's National Novel Writing Month Boot Camp. In this final week of our Alt NaNoWriMo programming, we're taking a step back from worldscapes and character quirks to look at your story's big picture. And when I say big picture, it doesn't matter how small or epic your writing ambitions might be. Understanding your story's genre, theme, and structure will help anchor your writing and make the whole process feel far less overwhelming. Plotters, pantsers, I promise that even though we're talking a lot about structure today, there is something for both of you, so please stay tuned for advice. What is your story's genre? Genre bending can keep your writing exciting and fresh, but it works best when you're intentional about it. Readers generally like at least some sense of what they're stepping into, whether it's action, comedy, horror, mystery, or romance. It lets them know what they can expect to feel and experience as they read. If you want to combine genres, think about which one you want to dominate or guide the story. Your genre helps set expectations, which you can play or diverge from. It shapes tone and influences your pacing. Think of it as a rough guideline, not as a limiter. There are literally dozens of subgenres you can play with, so spend some time reading and looking into them to help you determine which one speaks to you and which one you enjoy writing. If you're not sure where your story fits, here are a couple of exercises to try. If you're just starting out on your writing journey, take time to play and explore. This is good advice for everyone. This is the point of writing, is to enjoy what you're doing and to expand your creative horizons. So try writing a few different short stories, even if it's a single page, in different genres. Then take a look back after you've written a couple of different genres and ask yourself, what did you enjoy writing the most? If you've got a story brewing, but you're wavering between a couple of approaches, try thinking about how you want your reader to feel. Do you want to evoke a sense of intrigue, nostalgia, fuzzy feelings, or fear? What kind of visuals speak to you? So this is, you know, is it dark and stormy? Is it gritty? Is it bright and colorful? What is the landscape? What are the characters wearing? There are no wrong answers here. You're simply trying to find out what rings true for you. This is going to be a theme. What do you enjoy? What works for you? What rings true for you? What feels best? We've talked in other episodes about character development, world building. So let's think back to the world and characters you've already been brainstorming. What setting feels most natural to place them in? You can consider what your character wants and what their motivations are. You can also think about what role they play in the story. Are they falling in love? Are they escaping danger? Are they solving a mystery? Is this a coming of age? This can help you determine which genres fit that approach best. So I'll invite us to do a little exercise here. And this is a prompt that I got in a writing class one time that I had a lot of fun with. Using the sentence, "The dog was bad," I want you to write one page as a comedy, one page as a drama, one page as a fantasy, and one page as a thriller or a horror. Really quick, maybe 2 minutes for each one, 3 minutes for each one, and we'll be back in a bit.
appetites from the beginning. And I know you're willing and able. And I know you've got someone, but I'm ready. So just rid yourself of him and come get it. Ooh, I see it in your eyes.
So we're back from your mini writing exercise, The Dog Was Bad, in different genres. Hopefully these questions and that kind of activity can help you get closer to determining the genre that best tells your story, or the genre that you have the most fun with. Another key element in story development is defining your theme. Ask yourself, what do I want my reader to take away? As in, what message do you want to get across? Is your story ultimately about forgiveness, revenge, trust, betrayal, isolation, connection? Your theme becomes a guidepost and can help you identify your story's controlling idea. You don't want to get halfway through your writing and suddenly be stuck on whether the main character of your book will survive or forgive or find love and so on. Knowing your theme early helps prevent mid-story drift. So how do you map key plot points? Each plot event you add to your story should pull the story in a direction that strengthens the message you are building towards. I know I may be losing pantsers here with all this planning, but I promise I have advice coming up for you too. Even if you like to let the story flow, having a sense of at least the major plot points can give you direction and help minimize writer's block. If we consider the general structure of a story, it has, of course, a beginning, a middle, and an end. And here are some things you want to consider for each section. Beginning. So this is a very quick summary. If you want to get more advice on opening scenes, for example, check out episode 10 of the Word Labs Out Loud podcast and stay tuned to future episodes where we'll explore some of these other ideas more in depth. So beginning, you want to hook your reader right from the start. Your introduction should make them want to wonder what's next. Introduce your character and their conflict. Now that you have the reader's intention, ask what happened, why did it happen, and what is your protagonist trying to do about it? This is when you will introduce your first plot point. When you've laid out the conflict and why it happened to your character, ask yourself what happens now to force your character's hand and make them act towards their goal. After you introduce your first plot point, introduce a challenge. A smooth journey is nice in real life, but it doesn't make for a very interesting story. So what major or minor event, character, or incident pops up to stand in your character's way? Once we've got that beginning started, we move to the middle of the story. This is the moment of truth, when your character uncovers what or who is truly behind the conflict. They realize what's been holding them back, what's standing in their way, and they're about to do something about it. So, again, smooth journeys, not interesting. So we want to raise the stakes with another challenge. Keep tension real and meaningful. People want the struggle to feel real and feel like there are real things at stake for the character and their story. Add a twist, a devastating revelation, a heightened emotional moment, or a seemingly impossible obstacle to keep the reader's interest. Like every suggestion I give, this is not set in stone, but these are things you can think about to add some spice or some flavor, some intrigue to your story, and to keep it interesting for you as the writer as well. If there is a clear line from A to B and there are no snags or bends in that road, it doesn't make for a really rewarding journey for your character or for you or your reader. So what can you throw in to keep it interesting? Finally, we get to the end, and the end is generally considered crisis, climax, and resolution. So we've been throwing things at your main character. In the end, your character has to finally choose their course of action. The climax of the story is the result of your character's actions. Successes, failures, confrontations. They've faced their demons, which could be literal or figurative, and this is where their choices have led them. And the resolution is the result of their decision. What happens to your character now that the challenge or conflict has been faced? Did they fail? Did they succeed? What does this mean for them? Where might they go from here? Pantsers, I'm coming back to you. So even though there's three parts to that, there's a lot of detail there. If that amount of detail is going to prevent you from moving forward with your story, you might want to try a simplified version called the three-act method, which is very simply breaking your story into three main acts, stating which happens in each in very general terms. For a romance, it might be girl gets dumped, act one. Act two, girl meets someone new. Act three, they fall in love. It's easy and still very flexible. You're not pigeonholing yourself, but you still have a sense of where you're going as you write. Plotters and pantsers who want to go a step further can explore something called the hero's journey method. This is a classic, and it follows the protagonist on their journey of growth and change. Typically, this adventure will have the character starting out in their ordinary life or ordinary circumstances until they're forced out of their comfort zone to face challenges, gain insights, romance and return transformed. So let's take that super basic romance plot I had and ask what path your character will take based on this method. This is 12 steps. If you Google it, you will find many versions of this, so you don't have to memorize all the steps. But okay, for this example, part one, the ordinary world. Our heroine is in a relationship. Call to adventure. She gets dumped out of the blue. Maybe an engagement gets called off, or she's forced to move out of a shared apartment. Refusal of the call. She is distraught and convinced she's never going to love again. Meeting the mentor. Her friends remind her of who she is. Crossing the first threshold. She decides to revisit old passions and joins a reading group. Tests, allies, enemies. She meets other members of the reading group. Some are less than friendly, but one sparks her interest. Approach to the inmost cave. She gets nervous, and despite wanting to ask the person out, she takes off at the end of the meeting before speaking with them. Ordeal. She decides she does want to go for it and starts to track the love interest down. Reward. Seizing the sword, she finds them and has a chance to ask them out. The road back. Remember, we don't want this to be too easy. On the night of their date, our protagonist gets food poisoning and has to cancel. Resurrection. 2 days later, they run into each other at a coffee shop and have an impromptu date. Return with elixir. The two hit it off, and she realizes that she can love again. Again, look up the hero's journey. There are some really great examples out there. Readzy, which I've referred to before, has a good one that has some great examples based on movies. If you want to see how the hero's journey maps out in, say, the movie Rocky or The Martian. And these are just two examples of simple structure. So if neither of these is speaking to you, but you still think that some guidance on structure could be helpful, there are lots of other options out there. As a starting place, I would recommend checking out Readzy again, readsy.com/blog/guide/story-structure, which I think has about 7 or 8 different options. All right, so now, whether you're a pantser or a plotter, you have anywhere from a very rough to beginner draft of where you want your story to go. How do we fill in the gaps? Once you've sketched out your story's key moments, pantsers, you're probably going to just start writing. That's okay. Go for it. You have some things in your back pocket that you can revisit if you need to and you start getting stuck. Plotters. This is where you can add to your outline. Ask what needs to happen before and after each major scene. Remember, every scene should connect to what came before and influence what happens next. Otherwise, it's just filler and you risk losing your reader's interest. So if you created a scene and it's not pulling that story forward or moving it to that next step, it needs to be revised. It's not doing what it needs to do. You can record these scenes in something like a spreadsheet, or if you're more visual, using post-it notes or index cards can be helpful. If you're using that, which is something I tend to like doing, you use one card or post-it note per scene that you plan to include in your story and then stick them onto the wall or a whiteboard. And this can give you a literal big picture of your story. I also find it helpful because if you have an idea that you like, but it doesn't quite fit yet, you can have a parking lot, quote unquote, for them, and they may find a place later, or if not, it could be the start of another great story. Obviously, this is something that you can do with a spreadsheet as well, having different tabs for different scenes or for different acts of your story with points. All right, a final tip. While a certain degree of plotting can help you avoid writer's block because it gives you some direction, it does happen. Even in a scene where you know what you want to write, you might just not have the words for it yet. So if you get stuck during any of these steps, it's preventing you from moving your story forward. Write something in point form, even if it's insert conversation about X here, and then keep going. If you have a sense of where you want your scene to go, but you're not sure how to get there yet, skip to the good stuff. Write the scene's dramatic climax, and then you can go back later to flesh out the middle steps. The key with all of the work that we've been doing here is not to limit your creativity, it's to give it lots of space to play. Think of it as one big, glorious brainstorm that you're doing. These are not rules you have to follow. Even if you have your story meticulously plotted out,
you may have a brainwave that makes you want to move in a completely different direction, and that's okay. Even plotters are allowed to diverge from their plans. If we never diverged from our plans, we'd get pretty stuck in life. So don't be afraid to explore, don't be afraid to map a little bit too. Creativity is often about balance, and at the end of the day, you just want to do what works for you, what's fun for you, and what makes you enjoy what you're doing. So that concludes our National Novel Writing Month series. Thank you again so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with more writing advice and prompts.
CFRC's annual funding drive campaign is now underway through December 31st. Help us raise $25,000 to support our local arts and artists and keep our community informed with local news, concerts, and event listings on air and on our website. Visit CFRC.ca today and make your gift to Kingston's longest-running broadcaster serving our community since 1922. Get a tax receipt via Queen's University or get sweet CFRC swag and enter to win our raffle draws featuring gifts from amazing local donors. For every $5 donated, you get one more chance to win. Thank you for your support.